we get into today's podcast, I've got an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the sixth edition of our most popular program, The Neuroscience of Change. This training is based on what revolutionary research in neuroscience has revealed about transformational coaching, essentially showing us what works, what doesn't, and why. In the program, you'll learn what happens in the brain and body when different coaching techniques are used, how to guide your clients into positive learning states that allow genuine change to occur, and why some tried and true coaching methods actually inhibit change and what we can do instead. We created this course because I learned things from the lead teacher, Amanda Blake, that truly revolutionized the way I coach. And every year, she and all the teachers bring in new, cutting-edge science that continues to illuminate the process of transformation. Amanda will be joined by the rest of our world-class faculty of coaches and neuroscientists for this program, including Dan Siegel, Alan Fogel, Claire Dale, David Trelevin, and Richard Boyatzis. It's going to be an amazing, transformative journey, so I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. The first class is February 25th, 2025 with Amanda Blake. And if you sign up by February the 7th, you can get the early bird discount. So just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. So here we are, Shai. It's great to be with you again today. How are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, and I'm especially delighted because we are going to delve into this conversation.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your new book, Your Chakra Personality, which I really appreciated, and we'll get into why. But let me just introduce you to our audience first, and then I've got a first question for you. So Dr. Shai Tubali is an internationally renowned author, speaker, and philosopher with over 21 books published in 13 languages, including the best-selling The Seven Chakra Personality Types. He's got a PhD in philosophy from the University of Leeds, where his research focused on transformative dialogue and ancient Eastern and Western philosophies. He's regarded for his innovative work in the field of personal transformation through his Soul Design System and other things, and the Soul Design System explores how the interplay of primary, secondary, and supportive chakras shape our personality and life purpose, which is what we're going to really get into today. So we've already mentioned his latest book, Your Chakra Personality. And just to add, lastly, he's got over 30 years of experience leading thousands of people through workshops and seminars in, blending philosophical insight with metaphysical wisdom. And we've done a recent podcast on his therapeutic methods, which I think actually they're more than therapeutic methods. That feels a little bit limited in the way we're describing them. The expansion method, which I really am excited about as a process. And that process is used by professionals globally. All right, cool. So that being said, Shai, let's dive in. I think like my first question is like aimed at anyone listening who might be skeptical about chakras and the importance of them. And in my own journey, I just reflect on how I, you know, came across this word quite early on, you know, the idea of chakras and these like kind of energy centers in the body. And at the beginning, I was just like, well, that sounds a little bit esoteric and, you know, like, what is that new agey kind of thing? And it wasn't until actually quite recently, maybe 2-3 years ago, where I felt chakras kind of open up in meditation very specifically. And then I was like, oh, this is what this is. It's like a real thing. It's a really valid and important aspect of our journey and development. So yeah, now I find myself very passionately interested in and inquiring about them. And working with them in meditation. So yeah, that being said, what could you also just speak about the importance of chakras and your experience of them?
Yes, of course. Of course, I'm curious to hear which of the chakras have started and blossoming for you in meditation. That's already an interesting point. But first of all, let's emphasize that chakras are not a new agey phenomena. They are actually, they originate in ancient India, starting to be described about 2,500 years ago, and depicted and used in extremely subtle and semi-scientific processes in both Hinduism and Buddhism. So, and even hinted by Christian, Jewish, and Muslim traditions in many different ways. So it's very important to appreciate this kind of vaster context of chakras, which is subtle and precise and amazingly insightful. Actually, if there is anything that we can say about these modern times in relation to chakras, is that when they reached the West and embraced, they were quickly developed beyond their energetic and spiritual context into psychological, comprehensive psychological maps. And I think that's one advantage of the West, that it immediately, it has this kind of complex understanding of the human psyche. So this meeting point has led the chakras to become an enormously useful tool for coaching and therapy. And this is what I think we're going to discuss now. So it's important to understand this first point.
Yeah, I'm glad you actually named that we're exploring this conversation because of their potential use in coaching and developmental work. So could you then tell us how you view the chakras and your own journey of understanding how that's unfolded to where it is right now?
Do you mean in terms of coaching and therapy or in general?
Yeah, I'm thinking about in your book, you know, that you've had, it seems like you've had some quite profound insights into how the chakras can be viewed and used, yes, in coaching, but, you know, to determine our blueprints or personality types as well.
Yes. Well, let's start with the essentials, and then perhaps we'll be able to build on it, because I think otherwise we won't have a complete understanding. It's very important, first of all, that to understand that everyone experiences the chakras on actually a daily basis, and it only appears to be a mystical or esoteric tool. And it's very important, otherwise we might think of it as some kind of a dogma, a concept, or a theory. But actually, when people say, my heart is broken, or when we say, I feel suffocation in my throat, or when I say that we have, I feel butterflies in my stomach, or when my knees are trembling, or my legs are shaking. So we have these kinds of manifestations of chakra experience. And this means that we're talking about a somatic tool, because it's the body that speaks to us. It bypasses our mind. And in a sense, chakras are storehouses of our subconscious. They contain all kinds of impressions. So all these makes the chakras, first of all, a tool for immediate self-analysis. This is one thing. So it's important to begin to differentiate, because there is chakras as something that is a sort of tool for analysis, for self-observation on all levels of development. And then there is one particular individual kind of development, which is what my current book speaks about. And that is realizing that some of these chakras are especially vibrant or dominant, but inherently they are dominant not because we suffer from some kind of excesses. They are dominant not because we have put too much attention to this on this kind of on this specific chakra while ignoring other chakras. They are dominant because they actually map our the inner structure of our personality. So it's important to start with the universal daily experience, and that eventually culminates in this understanding of personalized mapping of our chakra system.
Right, yeah. Say a bit more about what becomes possible as we begin to map our system, and how you discovered basically that yes, this is not just like a kind of, because I think that's the way often people see it, isn't it? It's like they're universal, and each one has a different flavor or type, and we can just work with those qualities. But you're saying something quite different here. It's like, in a sense, like some of us have, we're oriented around a constellation of like a primary, secondary, and supportive chakra. So how did you discover that? What's that like when we can begin to recognize our chakra constellation?
Yes, exactly. So there is a when I had been introduced to the chakra system, this had been in a context of a yogic initiation, a 7-year long initiation into a specific Hindu tradition, named the Nityananda tradition. So the teacher initiating me into because it is a tradition relying heavily on the understanding of the subtle body and chakras and kundalini in particular. So that was an introduction in the context of the chakra energetics. But then I began, first of all, to explore chakras as in the context of psychological development. And later, I found myself asking this fundamental question: why is it that every person has a different experience of life? That's a very fundamental question because you and I, we have different experiences of life, and these different experiences are directed by a certain primal perception and immediate interpretation that also values certain elements in life while ignoring others. So this means that some people would relate heavily emotionally to the world and to people around them. Others would be much more intellectual and analytical. They would feel like observers of life, scientific in their perception, their understanding of impressions, and so on and so forth. So why is it that some of us have this particular experience, whereas others don't have it or don't even notice what impresses us so strongly, what we will consider the meaning of life, what really matters? And then I began to realize that actually people were directed by certain dominant chakras. And these chakras, they mark their energetic blueprint. And this blueprint has a lot to do with what, may I dare call it, our soul print. This means a certain blueprint guiding us both in terms of what is going to be our life theme, our most fundamental frictions in life, but also our sense of fulfillment. Because for me, my sense of fulfillment is found in places that others consider completely meaningless. For me, the moment of producing, giving rise to insights, for instance, understanding life's mysteries in an insightful way, through the deepest perceptions and analysis of the mind, this matters to me. This is my moment of ecstasy. But for most people, they couldn't care less about these moments, and they don't even pursue them. So this was the thing. This was my koan, my question. And when I came to realize that the answer lies in our chakra system, that was the key to the unfolding of this system.
Yeah, beautiful. Maybe it's good to begin to articulate the different types of, you know, kind of the types in a way that you've articulated in the chakras, and people can listen and begin to see themselves through that. Yeah.
Yes, so it's important to point out that all these personalities, they exist in all of us. So in every individual, they manifest as what we can call the seven players, which means that these are seven perceptions that are completely available to all of us, and we all experience them to varying degrees. But for some of us, these become our personality, our personalities, so to think of each chakra as a personality, a living, a vibrant, dynamic personality. This is how I came to capture each of the chakras as persons, as people. So yes, perhaps of course describing these seven types is can be extensive, but I will just be very, very precise, very brief. So, well, the root chakra gives rise to a type called the builder. The builder is a solid, slow, serious, diligent, meticulous type that likes to develop life persistently, improve its infrastructure, its frameworks, pursue balance in life, and plan long term. So that is the builder. The name captures it. It's the one that perceives life as a slow, gradual building, and that shapes its entire personality. So it's naturally very grounded, but is also prone to anxiety because it relies heavily on life structures. So it resists change. It wants everything to be eternal as it is always. Then the very opposite is the sacral chakra, the artist. I call it like this not because it's an actual artist, not because this is its profession necessarily, but because it has this kind of artistic or poetic spirit that doesn't care actually about diligence, about building, and this is its shadow side, because it it's really shies away from commitments, from lifelong commitments. It wouldn't want to be boxed in some kind of framework or commitment or even relationship. And it's all about cherishing, savoring the moment. It experiences life in as fragmented moments, and that's why it's highly interested in peak experiences, in explosions, in ecstasy, in pleasure. It's very sensual, and you can easily recognize them because they have this kind of presence that is all over the place, completely scattered, but is also charming and colorful, and also humorous. And then there is the third type. I think by now we already get realize how distinct they are, right? So then the solar plexus chakra type is the warrior, and the warrior is this kind of type that never has time, because it's so invested in pursuing its objectives, its mountaintops. It's all about conquering. It perceives life as conquering. So it doesn't care so much about emotions, neither his nor others. So it's a kind of a difficult and challenging personality to be around. But it is also it's extremely energetic. It's so energetic, it doesn't even know what to do with its overwhelming energy. So it keeps setting goals and destinations. And it's all about being number one, being an achiever. Of course, the usually warriors, they don't know how to differentiate themselves from their goals, from what they do. They have, in a sense, no personality, no self without their achievements and destinations. Then there is the heart chakra type, and the heart chakra type is, well, I think we could imagine it's guided by the conviction that all that matters in life is love. It's all about love. It's all about relationality. It cares mainly about intimacy and about also commitment, usually to the ultimate other half, or to service to the world, or to some divine being, or whatever its manifestation may be. So it suffers from extreme dependency, extreme emotional dependency, because like the warrior, it doesn't know what it is without the other. So it has a lot of shadow work to do with this kind of emotional dependency, to be able to even experience some kind of wholeness and some kind of emotional maturity other than extreme emotional hypersensitivity. And then there is the throat chakra type. The throat chakra type, I call it the speaker. And the speaker is the one driven by the wish to inspire, to educate, to disseminate ideas, also to collect all those wonderful ideas from everywhere. That's why it has this kind of power to bring together all kinds of different voices and to bring them into dialogue. So it has this kind of vision. It is dreamy, and that's why it's also sometimes ungrounded, because it doesn't care so much about the step-by-step process leading toward a destination. It actually is unhappy to realize that things require these kinds of diligent processes. It likes telling people, other people, how they should pursue those step-by-step processes. And sometimes it suffers from this kind of controlling aspect, because it wants to dominate others in the sense that it wants to guide them, it wants to show them. It also has this kind of ready-made script in its head, expecting reality to follow this kind of script. Well, it doesn't. When it doesn't, throat chakra type becomes rather confused or bewildered. The sixth chakra type, I call it the thinker. And they are the philosophers of the world, the scientists of the world. They usually they think about life. They don't really experience life. They find it actually very hard to become deeply embodied and to feel, because they're so inclined to observe everything from afar and to analyze. And sometimes they get confused because they think that if they analyze things, that things have now become understood, and therefore they don't need to be experienced. So they think analysis is experience. So their shadow side is usually about their fear of getting their hands dirty in the actual activity of life. And they have this kind of pride of looking at everything, observing everything, but also an enormous mind that that can penetrate into the heart of things, and also have this kind of outside the box thinking. And then lastly, there is the seventh type. And the seventh type, I call it the yogi, although it can be termed the meditator. And this is a rare type. Usually this type is actually so delicate, aloof, and has this kind of intense tendency toward renunciation that you find it in caves, in ashrams, in monasteries, in some spiritual communities. And when they do find themselves in the midst of Western society, they actually become quite disoriented and sometimes so heavily ungrounded that they begin to look for others to do life's work for them. So the yogi is simply the most spiritually inclined type. It doesn't mean that all the other types cannot be deeply spiritual, but there are those airy beings that really find, consider life's meaning, returning home, living, unshackling themselves from physical life in order to return to the subtle realms. So they never really feel that they are at home in this world. So this has been a brief history of the of the seven types.
I'm wondering whether people listening can, you know, resonate with some of those types more than others, like I can, as you share them. And I'm glad you said that about the yogi, because that was one of my questions, was like, oh, so, because there's, you know, I know a lot of deeply spiritual people who don't conform to that type, the yogi that maybe wants to transcend life and return home. Actually, I think, you know, because I'll speak for myself, like, you know, when I was doing the part of the assessment, which is, we can talk about that, how do you determine your type? I noticed the throat, the speaker type was strong, the yogi type was strong. And as you share this again, I noticed, like, oh, maybe it's not the yogi that's like a secondary type, because, you know, I feel called into a kind of spirituality which is not about transcending life or renouncing life, but actually truly about like being here fully and living in the world and enjoying life and the pleasures of life at the same time. So that's a personal reflection. And I'm just wondering, because, you know, what about the people who might say, yeah, but you're trying to, like, this is, you've put me in a simplistic box or something like that. I hear myself in all of these, you know, like I really relate to all of them. I did in a way too, you know, which makes sense, because if they're all, we have all these chakras inside of us, then of course we're going to relate to those kinds of energies. What would you say about that? People who might feel limited, or it's like you're simplifying me or something.
I like telling a certain anecdote about a person I met in a seminar on the chakra personality types in the Netherlands. So I gave these 2 days on the chakra types, describing each and their shadow work, their type of happiness, their type of fulfillment, and so on. And then that person sat in front of everyone at the end. It was a sharing circle, and this person who had been quiet until then said, "I was actually struggling throughout these entire 2 days because I was having a really hard time being boxed in by these descriptions. And so I was struggling so hard until at a certain point I realized that I was actually a sacral chakra type, and that's why I resisted this so hard." And everyone laughed because everyone understood at that moment that even a strong resistance to being pigeonholed, to being captured by a certain one energetic pattern, one blueprint, can be an indication of our type. Now, the thing is, what is important to understand is two things. First of all, it's very important, despite our sense of enormous potential or boundless potential, or the fact that we can, of course, relate to all seven players within our being. I mean, that's an indication that we are living, breathing human beings, because we are complex beings. And that's why I often use the chakra system to explain that complexity and to enable people to live integrative life. So despite our wish to identify or to disidentify ourselves with any kind of structure, any kind of pattern, we do need to acknowledge that in the end, we do demonstrate specific patterns. And these specific patterns, they persist throughout our lives, whether we admit it or not. We have certain strong tendencies that direct our choices, direct what we consider meaningful, what we consider truly happy, what we consider truly a true fulfillment. So that's one. And the second thing is that, on the other hand, it is important to understand. It is true. If we were only just one such personality type, we would probably be a sort of a caricature, a sort of a walking exaggeration, you see, of some kind of pattern. And that's why the system is far more complex than that. It is all about identifying an interplay of three dominant chakras. And this interplay begins to reveal a more complex, a subtler kind of personality that has balancing forces, that has other tendencies. Now, some of these tendencies actually create a sort of contradiction within our system, and that's why we often experience that we are being pulled in different directions. Although we have just one personality, we have strong forces pulling us in different directions. So these are my answers to this concern, understandable concern.
Yeah. And to add, when I read about the speaker and did the assessment, I'll ask you about that in a moment. As I shared with you when we were checking in, I found it that it just sparked something inside of me, like self-recognition, in a way that I hadn't considered before, which felt like it brought up a kind of self-appreciation, but also, yeah, self-knowledge and a sense of, yes, this is what's important to me. And help me make sense of a thread of my life, you know, like those things where, you know, how you describe that. Oh, in those moments, if you're that, if that's that chakra's dominant, you're going to feel completely fulfilled, you know, and I recognize myself in that. So how can we determine what our primary, secondary and supportive are? And could you give some examples of this, you know, this interplay as well, this more subtle, nuanced interplay between them?
Yes. First of all, I really appreciate how you describe this kind of in a way, seeing oneself reflected in the chakra mirror. It's because these are subtle energetic patterns, but when we do have this moment of this aha moment, this moment that enables us to settle into our essence, settle into our essential self. This is the beginning of not only self-understanding, but also perhaps authentic self-love. Because you see, everyone speaks of the need for self-love. But I think that most people, they don't know what self they are supposed to love. Because what am I supposed to love? I'm supposed to love my essence, with its strengths, but also with its limitations, which means what it cannot be, what it cannot become, while also acknowledging what it already is and what it can become. So it's connecting with essence and being able to love ourselves and also identifying our true source of happiness, because happiness is not just something that you can prescribe for everyone. This is the road to happiness, as some best-selling books try to do. One happiness for all. That's not how it works. So yes, you were asking how to come to realize this complex structure, and it's, first of all, it might be it might take some process. It cannot be so easy, because it's not about the ease. It's not about your astrological map or numerological map that you just insert your numbers and you get the result. The whole idea is the process of self-identification, of coming home, finding yourself, waiting within your this kind of chakra blueprint. So it is important to appreciate, to enjoy this kind of process of self-revelation. Now, there are different methods. First of all, there is a questionnaire that enables people to have this kind of first analysis of their strongest tendencies, their immediate interpretations of life, the parts of themselves that are most active. So this questionnaire has this kind of complex and somewhat repetitive way of capturing our predominant, our primary chakra type. So probably the easiest is to identify our primary chakra type, unless we've lived a life that has been so socially oppressive that we have denied our true being so much. And perhaps if we experience ourselves as miserable right now, as deeply unhappy, deeply dissatisfied, that is because we have strayed from that path of our primary type. So there is the questionnaire, and then there is learning about the types. Just as we did now, but although briefly, if we listen or read about these types extensively, we have this kind of system, simple system of percentage evaluation. How much do I evaluate in percentage the presence of this particular type in me. And sometimes for some people, they simply listen to a description and they feel that this is 100% them. And that's a moment of powerful recognition. Most people would recognize 80 or 70% of this type in them, manifesting in them. And sometimes we hear about a type and we think that's perhaps 10% or 20%. This means that this person, this player is active in me because I'm human, but it's not really an inherently dominant part of my being. And sometimes this is something that I actually need to compensate for consciously through self-coaching or being coached by someone who understands the chakra system, the chakra types. And then there are all sorts of practices to be able to discern the exact complex of our system. And for that, for instance, we sometimes are asked to capture our what I call the primal narrative. The primal narrative is one of the most interesting things I've ever taught. It's all about telling our life story in a way that is not about, I don't know, presenting our CV or presenting proudly our achievements, but actually focusing on our most, or pinpointing our most fundamental frictions with the world. And why is that? Why is this primal narrative so helpful in discerning my type? This is because my frictions with the world, my greatest conflict with the world is my frustration with my inability to fulfill what I love the most or what I hope for the most. So it reflects both my shadow work, which also has something to do with my primary type, and my deepest yearning in life. So if we try to answer this kind of, or complete this kind of sentence, ever since I can remember myself, my experience of life has been, or my experience of the world has been, or my experience of myself has been. And of course, in the book, there are very accurate instructions because it's a detailed process, and it also has two stages in order to identify the secondary type and the supportive type. But it's starting with just with this sentence helps us to understand that we do have a fundamental friction with the world. Sometimes we think of our friction with the world as something so multifaceted, but actually in the end, it boils down to a certain conflict, a certain tension, and that actually operates like a thread throughout our life.
Could you? I know it's going to be unique to each individual, but could you give an example of a conflict, you know, based on a player type?
Yes, of course. You say that this is individual. That is correct. Of course, it is individual, but it is also not so individual, because if I were a heart chakra type and I met you as a heart chakra type, and we discussed our primal narrative, our primal narratives should be more or less the same. And that's what's so astounding, because we have these kinds of essential frictions that are shareable in terms of our chakra types. So I've given the example of a heart chakra type would have this kind of search for relational fulfillment, for the other half, the ultimate half, and for experiences of intimacy, and probably their essential narrative would revolve around disappointments, emotional disappointments, betrayals, a sense of abandonment, a sense of yearning for that other half, experiences of emotional dependency that have been thwarted because others, well, do not share our chakra type necessarily, and the journey toward emotional wholeness. So that's one example.
Yeah. That's good. Then I'm curious, as I said, I related to the speaker type, and what I could see is one of, I don't know if it's, yeah, is it the primary, but it certainly it's been a struggle throughout my life, would be my ability to speak with authenticity or to articulate my inner world in a way that touched people. I always admired people. You gave the example of Martin Luther King. That's the speech he made. It just touches me in this place of profound reverence and transmission of like possibility. So that's been there, and I remember, and I've seen my development around that too, so hearing, for example, Thomas Hubel one time talk about word and energy coming together, mm-hmm. and being, speaking online and stopping in my tracks, hearing him talk about that as like, that's it, that's something that's deeply meaningful to me. So that's kind of what's coming up as I hear you speak. And I'm wondering then, how would this weave in with the nuance of the three types? Because, that might be where is. So in a way, I'm hearing you say, like, is this kind of struggle or this essential journey really connected to the primary type? Or is it also influenced by the three? And we still haven't given a kind of picture of like the nuance, yes, of the three types as well. Yeah.
Well, perhaps we could start by giving an example of my own chakra blueprint. That could perhaps be a way to demonstrate all nice. These elements without trying to be too educational, too instructive. So, well, my chakra type is, my blueprint is consists of the sixth chakra, the third eye, the thinker as my primary. Then there is my supportive is the fifth chakra type, the throat chakra, the speaker. And then the supportive type is the warrior. So that's a good example, because the sixth is the primary, which means it's my essence, the one that both defines my sense of meaning in life, what truly I find a source of happiness, what brings me closest to the soul. This is how it should be defined, but it also indicates my deepest struggle with life and my shadow work. Then there is my secondary type. The secondary type is always about fulfillment. It's like it's my vehicle for expression in the world. So the secondary type, in my case, it's speaking. Speaking, of course, is not just speaking audibly. It can be also in the written form or through music, in any kind of communication with the world that is designed to influence others. So, but it's always guided not by just poetic spirit, like an artist, but for the speaker, it's all about wanting to say something through its any form, whatever form of art or whatever form of expression it takes. So for me, take this for instance, this is already a source of a great battle, a great battle in life, because the fifth chakra is extremely outgoing. It's all about influence. It's all about mass influence. It's all about bringing some kind of manifesting a certain vision. Whereas the third eye, the sixth chakra, is extremely introverted, is not interested in influence. It just wants to delve into books, into philosophy, and wants to understand life. And this is where it finds its meaning. So then imagine this kind of contradiction. There is a sense of fulfillment can only take place in this kind of manifestation. But happiness can only take place in this kind of completely introverted and even a way of life that wants nothing to do with the masses and with expressing oneself. And then there is also the third, the supportive type, which is our source of nourishment. It's like our source of energy. When we feel depleted, where do we go? So for each of us, there is a source of nourishment. In my case, ironically, the third source of nourishment is this kind of ambitious energy, this fiery energy of the warrior, which means that my nourishment is actually by keeping remaining faithful to all kinds of goals and destinations, and the sense of always progressing, always being some kind of movement toward a higher goal. So this is an example of an extremely a fiery system, and it's actually quite restless. It means that it never stops. It has no sources of relaxation. And therefore, one of the things that we do in the chakra types is identifying the gaps in the system, which means what we don't have in our system is also something that we have to somehow use in order to balance our excesses. Now, the point is that we always need to return to our primary type to get in touch with essence and happiness, to when we want to get in touch with the soul. And this is also how in coaching we use it to help people to answer the deepest dilemmas concerning happiness and meaning in life. It's always about when we look at that system, if I'm over-focused on manifestation, I'm going to be miserable. Even if I'm going to be utterly successful in the world, that would not bring me happiness. So that's an important key.
It's a beautiful segue, because I wanted to talk to you about applying this in coaching. So, you know, we could even carry on with your example. So, you know, if a coach was coaching you in this system,
yes,
I'm hearing, you know, of course, there would be like helping you identify your primary, secondary and supportive types. I'm curious about that, but also how could they then support you in, for example, the tension between the thinker, the third eye, and then the throat, and then the balance with the achiever, the warrior? Like, how what would that coaching process look like in general and specifically with your example?
Yes. Yes, first of all, there is an understanding of that of this kind of map and its innate contradictions, but also seeing how we can begin to harmonize the map in terms of making sure that each of these chakra types plays its role. Because when they begin to become like, in a way, overbearing personalities, they want to pull in their own direction, they begin to contradict one another. But when they support one another and truly play their role, then they become amazingly beneficial. So when we understand, for instance, that the value system of my throat chakra is not going to bring me, is not aligned with my deepest kind of value system, I cannot look for my happiness in manifestation. And whenever I begin to follow the magnetic power, the charismatic power of the throat, of my throat chakra, and I fall into the trap of thinking that this is where my happiness lies, I'm going to be unhappy. So we first need to begin to distinguish happiness from fulfillment and nourishment from fulfillment. So that is a very important key, and also beginning to realize what my friction in life is. It must be located or associated with the sixth chakra and not with the life theme of the throat chakra. So when I do shadow work in coaching, when I work on all those shortcomings or conflicts with the world and with myself, I need to focus on my primary type. I also need to see how I devote as much time as possible to my nourishing aspect, which means that I really employ my supportive type as nourishment, because many people, they simply neglect that. So these are just examples. Of course, this means that therapy work should be guided by my primary type. Manifestation, finding my purpose, finding my way of expression in the world should be found in my secondary type. So these are just examples.
Amazing, amazing. And can you then tell me about the relationship between the psychological and the energetic in the coaching? Because, you know, I can imagine a coach is both, you know, inviting the client into the narrative of their story. And you know, you're talking together and clarifying these tensions. But then there's this, you know, this embodied energetic aspect to chakras as well. And how is that kind of balancing, or, you know, use the word balancing, or like, you know, making sure things are in the right place kind of process? How much of that is, you know, would you train coaches to be able to help clients work energetically with chakras?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because chakras are not just an analytical tool. Obviously, they originate in an energetic system. So it's very important. We said at the very beginning that the chakras are fundamentally somatic. It's the body that speaks to us, and therefore they bypass our thinking mind. By the way, also for the coach, because if the coach has all kinds of dogmatic ideas about the coachee, about the person, the chakras tell us the real story that often bypasses or transcends the coach's expectations and assumptions. And this is what I call, it's a funny term, I call it being a chakra whisperer.
Nice.
And this is because we need to understand chakras are in essence an intersection of the physical, energetic, emotional, mental, and spiritual. This, of course, makes them enormously beneficial in so many ways, for physical healing, for emotional and mental balancing, for spiritual awareness. But this means that because there are this kind of intersection, and because there are this extraordinary somatic tool, we can, if I speak for long enough about a certain challenge in my life, at a certain point, the associated chakra is going to become active. That's the simplest activity of the chakra. It simply responds to whatever you focus on at the moment, because in a way you give voice to certain impressions and imprints contained in it. So it begins to be stimulated. So one of the best things to be done in a coaching session, and this is where chakras become enormously beneficial, is that if a coach is informed by chakra knowledge, but also knows how to be open to how the chakras speak at that very moment, then a coach would ask that person, so which area in the body is most active right now as you speak? That's the simplest question. So where does it feel in your body? Now, for most of us, if we don't have the understanding of how chakras are associated with specific parts in the body, we will probably not give that an important an unusual meaning. But if you do understand, then even if people say, I feel it in my hands, you will understand that this is related to the heart chakra, to heart chakra themes. If they say, I feel it in my eyes, you will know that this is related to the third chakra very often, throat and so on. And then you will also be able as a coach to understand how this could be further explored, because now that the part, the body part, has become conscious, we can already begin to craft what I call a chakra map. And a chakra map is beginning to trace a certain emotional theme or a certain blockage to its original chakra, and also to discover its probably relations to other chakras, other relevant chakras, and ultimately to pinpoint the solution to this particular challenge. And what I find so exciting about these chakra maps is that you don't use your analytical knowledge, your preconceived knowledge, to determine, okay, so now this must be the chakra. If I speak about my emotional condition, this must be a heart chakra. That's dogmatic. You see? But when the chakras speak, they often surprise us. All of a sudden, we realize that our emotional problems begin in the sacral chakra or in the root chakra. And that is where, and that the solution is actually found in an altogether different chakra. So that's when you are realizing that chakras, they force you to commit yourself to a certain process of listening, a process of full attention that relies, of course, draws on your chakra knowledge, but is also unexpected in its revelations.
I love that you're saying that, because that's the danger for me of learning, like, oh, these are the types, and then you're kind of like working from the outside in, like labeling. And it's kind of that, getting back to that overly simplistic kind of, it's conceptual. But this, what I'm hearing you saying is actually there are distinctions that then point you towards this like living experience, and actually that, as the chakra whisperer, it's like, what's really important is that you actually tune in together to what's actually arising in the body. And that's what's revealing the journey as it unfolds, which for me aligns with, you know, what I view as like the real transformational currency of experience, when we're working with what's here and what's unfolding, rather than layering, you know, preconceived notions of what should be happening and where we should go. So that's fantastic. I'm so glad we got this in there. And I'm wondering, you know, you just gave that example of the nuance here of listening. And so, because in my mind, I'm like, oh, okay, if I'm a speaker type, then if I start to relate to my throat chakra, you know, as an energetic center, then, you know, that's either going to surface, you know, contractions that want to be met with love, or it might expand that center so that I have, you know, even more access to the, to that, that the essence that I am. But actually I'm hearing you say, no, it's much more nuanced than that. There could be all kinds of other chakras involved that are, you know, that are the root source of challenges and related to your primary chakra.
Exactly. That's so beautifully said. Yes. Well, you know that this is how I developed my entire chakra teachings. I actually refused to read books about chakras, and all I did was to meet people in coaching and therapy sessions, and whenever they described a certain emotional challenge, certain traumas, then I would ask them, where do you feel that in the body? And I would in an almost scientific way, or at least systematic way, I would begin to classify all these different emotions, traumas, imprints, according to the relevant chakras. And from that, I began to develop the teaching. So the teaching was the result of listening. But even then, that is not enough, because we cannot impose this knowledge on a living person. And this is, we have to let their chakras speak to us as coaches. So yes, you're asking, I think, about how we cannot just now have this kind of label. Joel is a throat chakra type, throat chakra personality type, and therefore this must be his life themes, and this is what we are going to focus on, and this is how we interpret everything. The thing is that chakras are not, they work simultaneously as a typology and as a psychology and as a map of psychological development that is universally valid, and a map that also is triggered not in a linear way. It's not that we're just progressing from root chakra to sacral chakra to solar plexus chakra. It's life. Chakras are just like, they're like ways of our tools of response to the ever-changing life, and accordingly to the ever-changing themes in our life. And that's why we cannot say this is your challenge right now. You need to cultivate your throat chakra, because perhaps right now your chakra system actually tells you, no, you have to work on your heart or on your joy chakra, the sacral chakra, because perhaps this would be key to your further development as a speaker. So that's what's so colorful and exciting about it, because it never it remains in the form of rigid assumptions about what should be done.
Yeah, that's stunning. And interestingly enough, I actually felt called into joy, cultivating joy. So you named that.
We're at our time, and it feels like there's another couple of hours. We're
It's
delving into the intricacies and nuances of this.
always with you.
Yeah, of course, this is
That's great.
also why you've created a training for coaches.
Yes.
So, yeah, could you tell us about that and where we can find out more about it?
Yes, of course. Well, if people are invited, listeners are invited to enter my website, shytobali.com. And under the category events, there is an enormously extensive landing page detailing the chakra-informed therapy and coaching course. This course consists of a 1 year program that actually gathers all my chakra teachings and chakra methods into one comprehensive coaching and therapy training. So that is actually a way for us to both become informed in terms of our knowledge, understanding of how chakras constitute a psychological map, how chakras can be read as chakra maps, periodical chakra maps, how chakras can be a description of our personalities and how we can accomplish this accurate description. But also, more important than that, I would say that it's meant to provide coaches and therapists with this sense of confident and dynamic employment of chakras in their sessions, which means that they don't sit with some kind of ready-made formula guiding them do this and do that. But that this supports their ability to listen. And by being able to listen so attentively, they can use chakras as a tool for setting the goals of a treatment or a coaching process, techniques for treating all kinds of blockages, and above all, ways in which they can analyze personalities, analyze subtle processes, both emotional and mental.
Yeah, beautiful. So, yeah, that sounds really rich. And yeah, just really appreciate the way you've approached this, describing how you didn't just read books and then apply that, but actually, you were a kind of scientist, and you were, codifying through direct experience what was arising. I love that. So, yeah, Shai, just thanks again. I'm sure this isn't the last time, but really appreciate everything you've shared with us today. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's always a sheer delight to engage in dialogue with you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Neuroscience of Change. This program reveals the biology of change, showing us what happens in the brain and the body when different coaching techniques are used. You'll learn how to work with the innate pathways of change in all of us so you can create powerful transformation with your clients. Just go to coachesrising.com/neuroscienceofchange to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by February the 7th. Here we are, we're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.